Yeah, you got it. It's a Thursday, the 14th day of September, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Collin. As you might suspect by now, we're going to start off today's look at the news with the good, the bad, and the, once again, truly ugly. And sadly, as is often the case, the good is just a reversal, probably only short term at that, of the bad that we saw last week. A trial balloon shot down like it so richly deserved. New Mexico's traitorous, tyrannical governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, has been under fire, pun intended, from both sides of the alleged aisle after she temporarily suspended the Bill of Rights and said, the hell with your God-given, once constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. Not in this state, not as long as I'm dictator, you don't. And said at least one of the stories and a number of tweets, even gun control nutcase David Hogg admitted, shockingly, that, whoops, she went too far too fast with her order to block concealed and open carry. Here's the story. The scoop seems to go to Nick's order. A federal judge in Albuquerque has blocked the tyrannical New Mexico not law and suspension of the Second Amendment in the state. And this comes after both New Mexico's attorney general and other Democrats in the state announced they'd all be refusing to enforce the obviously anti-constitutional order. And how bad was it? Well, communist Congress critter Ted Lieu of California was yet another one who surprisingly spoke out against Grisham, along with the already mentioned David Hogg. Says DC Drano's coverage, not only David Hogg, but leftist Congress critter David Lieu apparently received their marching orders pertaining to the New Mexico governor's ban by edict. Quote, there's no such thing as a state public health emergency except to the U.S. Constitution. While for the first time people are beginning to agree with them, it's a bit strange they use the exact same verbiage that insider polls are evidently showing as being responsible for a big dip in approval among once called Democrat voters. And I'll move on with this observation. There's an unconfirmed rumor, probably hearsay, that at least one tyrannical nutcase in the governor's mention was heard wandering the halls murmuring, was it too soon? Was it too soon? On then to the bad, also courtesy of multiple reports via the Epoch Times, Zero Hedge, The Burning Platform, and Martin Armstrong. The group of G20 leaders has agreed to a plan that is intended to eventually impose digital currencies and digital IDs, you can think Mark of the Beast, and you'd be pretty darn close, on their respective populations, whether people like it or not. And despite fear, says the Epoch Times story, that governments will use them, as you might expect, to monitor people's spending and crush dissent, among other forms of totalitarian control. The G20, currently under the presidency of India, adopted a final declaration on the subject over the weekend in New Delhi, after announcing last week that they had agreed to build the necessary infrastructure in order to implement their tyrannical digital currencies and IDs. Indian Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman said that discussions were underway to build a global framework to regulate crypto assets, since they believe cryptocurrencies cannot be regulated efficiently without total international cooperation. In other words, we certainly don't want any free market competition. But, said sources within the G20, there was no talk of banning cryptocurrencies, at least not outright, and at least not right off the top. But, oh yeah, here we go. Some of the suggestions called for additional policing of cryptocurrencies, which are decentralized and do not operate under the control of these central banksters or their public-private partners. Und sat, as you might suspect, will eventually be verboten. Critics, meanwhile, said the Epoch Times story, say that these proposals could allow government authorities to impose a socialist credit score system and decide how and whether and when or even if citizens can be allowed to spend what is no longer, at that point, their money. Of course, it wasn't really money ever to begin with. And let's not forget, with the central currency, you need the central mark. At the summit, continues the story, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen called for an international regulatory body for, among other things, artificial intelligence, digital ID systems, and all kinds of things similar, she noted, to coronavirus vaccine passports, and, what else, she advocated for global cooperation to address the challenges presented by AI and called for the United Nations, again, what else, to have a larger role in regulation of AI, i.e. control, and called the European Union's COVID digital ID certificate a perfect model for the Mark of the Beast, she said for the Digital Public Infrastructure, or DPI, which would include the digital IDs. Quote, many of you are familiar with the COVID-19 digital certificate. The EU developed it for itself. The model was so functional and so trusted that 51 countries on 4 continents adopted it for free, she said. Today, the WHO uses it as a global standard to facilitate mobility, or in some cases, folks lack thereof, in times of health threats. I want to thank Dr. Tedros again for the excellent cooperation, she said, referring to the international tyrannical attempt to shut down any and all alternatives to what they've got planned for you. And in case you don't recall, the Epoch Times kindly reminds us that the EU is currently trying to introduce their block-wide digital identity app that would consolidate all kinds of personal information and things that you probably, if you knew better, didn't want consolidated, including passports, driver's licenses, and medical history. And this is telling. Continued van der Leyen, the future is digital. I passed 2 messages to the G20. We should establish a framework for safe, responsible AI with a similar body as the IPCC is for climate. Wait a minute. You mean the sellout bunch of whores that decided they want to control the entire world using non-existent man-made global warming? Yeah, that one. Back to the quote. Digital public infrastructure are an accelerator for growth. No, it's an accelerator for control, which is, let's be honest, the opposite of growth. Unless, of course, you're talking cancer. They, she said, must be trusted, interoperable, and open to all, whether you like it or not. And I say that, folks, because as the story notes, the Cato Institute in their 2023 CBDC National Survey back in May found that only 16% of Americans, the really, really out-of-touch ones, support the adoption of a CBDC, while at least 68% of respondents said they would oppose the Mark of the Beast, even if the survey didn't use that terminology, and some of them don't even recognize it yet as such, if the government started to monitor their purchases. Oh, yeah, and it says people are also concerned that Big Brother may eventually try to turn off access to their bank accounts, maybe because they're already doing it. I guess no international Big Brother New World Order story would be complete without the official pablum. In a separate press statement, IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva praised her Indian counterparts via X and said, quote, to this end, the G20 has tasked several relevant institutions to improve regulation and supervision of crypto assets. The IMF is contributing to proposals for a comprehensive policy framework and advance the debate on how central bank digital currencies could impact the global economy and financial system. And rather than recognize cryptocurrency assets as legal tender, they note, government should instead create licensing and registration processes for all crypto asset issuers and focus on treating all of their activities similarly. And as if all that wasn't enough, the World Bank has also praised India's use of digital public infrastructure to, quote, enhance financial inclusion. They always put it that way when it's something you don't want to be included in. And delivery of public goods and services in a report written for the G20 summit, saying that the nation's India Stack DPI system, which comprises a digital ID and an interoperable UPI digital payment platform, has been cited as an example that other nations, whether they like it or not, might be encouraged to follow. The G20 believes that DPIs can serve people, yeah, not just in the financial sector, but also in the domains of health, education, and socialist welfare. Because, quote, the India Stack exemplifies this approach, combining all kinds of things that we might know another name for here. Digital IDs, interoperable payments, and digital credentials ledgers, as well as account aggregation. And you know, folks, as I was reading that, I got to pause and take a quick aside here. Anybody remember a wonderful Twilight Zone episode from years ago entitled To Serve Man? I can't help it. Whenever I hear these globalist world controllers masquerading as bureaucrats who just want to serve man, I can't help but think about that episode having to do with an alien race that turned out to be not quite so friendly. To serve man was supposed to be right out of their Bible, something they're driven by their altruism to do. Turns out, as the final line of the TV show said, no, it's not a religious text, it's a cookbook. Half a century later, there's still an appropriate message there. Which takes me right to Martin Armstrong, who, as usual, cuts to the chase. G20, he says, and the one world government dream. So, yep, the movement towards that one world totalitarian state is proceeding with India, the chair of the G20. has the leaders over the weekend reaching an agreement to impose by sheer force their digital currencies and digital IDs on their respective population. However, the point here is to create a shared network to deny travel to individuals they deem to be non-compliant with their tyranny. That's the problem, he says, when you have career politicians. They're not on our side, but they sit down to look down and control with disdain. And the G20 under India's presidency has adopted a final declaration on the subject over the weekend. The goal here is to eliminate the underground economy. Canceling paper money will make paying cash under the table impossible. They claim this will eliminate all crime. Yeah, sure, just like gun control does, folks. And bank runs, too. The estimations are that the untaxed economy manages to account for between 20 and 40% of world GDP. And while they cleverly state that there are no discussions on eliminating cryptocurrency, but they intend to seize all the cryptos eventually anyway, there would still be an underground economy, the gray market. So that's why Christine Lagarde, he said, admitted there will be controls on digital currency, and the G20 announced they'd agreed to build the infrastructure necessary to implement their digital IDs and digital currencies, all part of the 2032 agenda, as Martin Armstrong says he's warned. But this will fail, he notes, and in the end, only lead to revolution, because there's zero economic benefit to digital currencies. They do this purely as a control mechanism to control the economy and eliminate the gray market that they can't tax and control otherwise. We must understand, he concludes, that this is why the Democrats oppose RFK Jr. just as they do Trump. The Republicans hate Trump, and these people only want career politicians in those positions of power. Because we, too, like them, are their hated enemy. And anyone who thinks they care about us, says Martin Armstrong, is simply a delusional fool. We're the ants in the ant farm, and they want to observe and control everything we do, just like communist leaders did 34 years ago. Yeah, folks, this time, remember, they're progressives. Which brings us finally to the truly ugly. Hunter Biden, who else, is suing a former Trump White House aide for publishing the contents of his infamous laptop from hell.
You cursed rat! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Melting! Oh, what a world! What a world! Who would have thought a good-looking girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? Ah!
Yeah, it's ugly, all right, but there's even more. This is the very same laptop from hell, which contains all kinds of evidence, which should have deep-sixed the career of the scumbag crime family before the installation of the Oval Orifice, so that there would have been no need for a bogus, way, way belated impeachment distraction. And yes, says Zero Hedges coverage, that's the very same laptop that 51 former so-called intelligence officials claimed, and they were lying, that it had, quote, all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation, and that the infamous Anthony Blinken, former top Biden campaign official turned traitorous Secretary of State, had a central role in discrediting after the New York Post reported that Hunter Biden had exploited his father's position as then vice president for, personal gain. Lots of bribes and, of course, outright treason, as we've now seen since then. In the Wednesday night filing, Hunter Biden's legal team is suing Garrett Ziegler, who operates the website Marco Polo, claiming that they and others violated federal and California, get this, what an absolute scumbag, they violated privacy laws by accessing, tampering with, manipulating, altering, copying, and damaging his computer data. And you know what, folks? There's so much wrong here that it goes way, way beyond ugly. You'd think Hunter Biden would sue the FBI. After all, weren't they supposed to have hidden this thing, did away with the data, and made sure that it never, ever saw the light of day? Hey, there's your lawsuit, Hunter. Yeah, they violated his privacy by not bleach-bitting it like they did for Hitler and everybody else that's far left. Oh, the bitter irony. And hey, let's not kid ourselves, folks. Everything on this laptop, the NSA and other three-letter agencies were well aware of long before the FBI got the responsibility of trying to make sure it stayed hidden. In response, Garrett Ziegler told CBS News that neither I nor the nonprofit Marco Polo have been served with a lawsuit, but the one I read this morning, he said, out of the Central District of California should embarrass the lawyers that filed it because, quote, it's not worth the paper it's written on. And he added, apart from the numerous state and federal laws and regulations which protect authors like me and the publishing that Marco Polo does, well, wait a minute, folks, he has to remember what happened to Owen Schroyer. There is no First Amendment anymore. And free speech and freedom of the press are clearly dead letters in the once constitutional republic. Still, though, he said it's not lost on us that Joe's son filed this slap, S-L-A-P-P, one day after a so-called impeachment inquiry into his father was announced. Unquote. And, yeah, what an amazing coincidence. The first scumbag son, he said, is, quote, a disgrace to our great nation. Unquote. And since we're onto the ugly part of the stories today anyway, you may recall that earlier this year, the shameless crackhead whoremeister first son sued a Delaware-based computer repairman, John Paul MacIsaac, after he abandoned the laptop from hell and didn't pay the bill for doing what he had every contractual right to do. And this part is almost funny. The story shows that MacIsaac recalled the now infamous crackhead coming into his store just before he closed, perhaps in a drunken stupor, and saying, quote, I need the data recovered off these, but they all have liquid damage and won't turn on. Yep, maybe that's what happens, folks, if you spill a fifth of vodka all over them. MacIsaac maintains that he obtained the information on Hunter's laptop legally after Biden himself dropped it off in April 2019 and never returned to claim it. In fact, he says, he walked into the FBI field office and explained what he had, whereupon he was rebuffed by the federal cover-up artists. He was told basically, get lost, and that was mid-September 2019. 2 months passed, then out of the blue, the FBI contacted him, and two agents from the Wilmington field office came to John Paul's business. He offered to give them the hard drive, no strings attached, but they declined to take the device. I guess later they were told, ooh, you screwed that one up big time. 8 months later, Isaac provided a copy to then-President Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who, in turn, provided a copy of the hard drive to the New York Post. And as you know, the cover-up really had to switch it into high gear after that. Now, this part hasn't gotten as much coverage, but it's certainly interesting. Last year, several whistleblowers in the FBI told Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa that agents investigating Hunter Biden, quote, opened an assessment which was used by an FBI headquarters team to improperly discredit negative Hunter Biden information as disinformation. That's the standard operating procedure, don't you know? And they caused investigative activity to cease. What? Does that mean there was actually ever an investigation to begin with? Adding that his office received, quote, a significant number of protected communications from highly credible whistleblowers regarding the so-called investigation. Grassley then added that, quote, verified and verifiable derogatory information on Hunter Biden was falsely labeled as disinformation, unquote. And gee, do you think, says the Washington Examiner. Folks, this is absolutely, and I'll say it again, beyond ugly. And I have one final observation. No, it's not just a coincidence that this so-called lawsuit shows up right at the same time that the do-nothing rhino Congress finally says, well, the evidence is so overwhelming, we at least got to pretend to have an impeachment inquiry. Better way late than never. No, I can't help but think there's more here. This lawsuit for violating the privacy of the first criminal is so egregious, so absolutely infuriatingly evil, that you can't even imagine that they would have dared to do it a couple of years back. But now, given the complete destruction of the rule of law, oh yeah, they're just plain piling on. And since at this point we're talking about things that are both bad and ugly, got a couple more related stories. The first one comes from newsaddicts.com, also via the Center for Death and Control, which admits now that COVID shots, the Zyklon B injections, well, okay, they don't really, but their data certainly does, lower male life expectancy, according to their own data, by 24 years. Yeah, it says, a new study has confirmed CDC data shows that men who receive the COVID-not vaccines and boosters will tragically suffer a 24-year average loss in their life expectancy. Scientists, and I guess this is the real kind that aren't on the take, have analyzed official data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, yeah, what a lie, and the U.K. government, to determine the long-term harms associated with the mRNA Zyklon B poison pokes. The study aimed, it says, to weigh the balance of risk for the vaccines sick by calculating just how long the negative side effects of mRNA not vaccines take to reduce over time after a person receives each dose. And disturbingly, researchers found that the damage does not lessen over time, but instead increases cumulatively with each shot. CDC all-cause mortality data has shown that each vaccine dose increased mortality on average by 7% in the year 2022 compared with these same figures for 2021, reports Slate News. So the data revealed that each year, each and every person who has been duped into thinking they're vaccinated becomes more and more likely to die at a rate of 7% per dose per annum. Meaning that, as the study puts it, the mRNA not vaccines and booster shots are, quote, a slow-acting genetic poison. Oh, yeah, and the study also noted that the human body doesn't really recover from any amount of mRNA injections. Which is, let's be honest, folks, what you'd expect. If, in fact, as we've seen, it modifies people's DNA, that doesn't tend to reverse. So, taken as a baseline from 2021, a person who got five doses would be 350% more likely to die in 2031, 700% more likely to die in 2041, and 1,050% more likely to die in 2051, if they make it that far, than a person who didn't get duped into becoming a guinea pig for the Zyklon B, which is where they get the calculations for the life expectancy decline. Here's another one, this time courtesy of Natural News and Mike Adams himself, entitled 5G Remote Kill Vector. A science paper has revealed that cell phone signals can activate the release of biological payloads from graphene oxide that, who knows how it got in there, somehow managed to get injected into the body. This is a science paper, he says, published in Materials Today Chemistry, that reveals cell phone signals can be used to release biological and or chemical payloads from graphene oxide that's been introduced into the human body. The paper was published in September 2022 and is entitled Remote-Controlled Electro-Responsive On-Demand Nanotherapy, sick, based on amine-modified graphene oxide for synergistic dual drug delivery. And the abstract from the study reveals how a cell phone can emit signals to activate a low voltage current that interacts with graphene oxide molecules, causing efficient delivery of drug payloads. Quote, the study aims to determine low voltage control dual drug release from GO or graphene oxide surface. Here it says we've demonstrated how to control the drug release rate remotely with a handy mobile phone and zero passive release at idle time. Turns out, notes Adams, that graphene oxide, because of its extremely high surface area and complex structure composition, turns out to be the perfect molecule for delivery of biological drug payloads inside the human body, especially when combined with a polymer or inorganic matrix. Moreover, the presence of a specific frequency of a low voltage current is all that's necessary, he says, to cause graphene oxide to release its pre-programmed payload. And as you perhaps remember, folks, your host has been one of many who have warned about the dangers of millimeter wavelengths, the kind of things that are associated with 5G signals and shouldn't be allowed anywhere near living, breathing creatures, plants, animals, or people, in your host's technical opinion. Perhaps because, as Mike Adams notes, and I would suggest has been proven, 5G uses the same bandwidths of millimeter wavelengths known to cause powerful burning sensations on human skin tissue. This is the reason why it's used in the active denial systems by the military, aka the pain ray. It's also been linked, he notes, to eye and heart problems, suppressed immune function. Isn't that an all-time winner of late? Genetic damage and fertility problems. Hey, so far as the deep state and those who want to commit human genocide are concerned, that's like a triple threat. The Federal Communications Commission, meanwhile, admits no 5G safety studies have actually been conducted or funded by the agency or the telecom industry, and that none are planned. Hey, why ask the question if you don't want to know the answer, and more importantly, you don't want anybody else to either? But let me note again, the military, folks, has done those studies, and they know how pain rays work. Presumably, they know what causes pain, and they know how to go beyond that. And you can guess that's why it's classified. But oh yeah, and isn't that convenient for a whole bunch of other reasons, arguably also classified. Says Adams, the FCC has clearly been captured by the telecom industry, which in turn has perfected the disinformation strategies employed by others, like tobacco and other evil, now part of the three-letter agencies, before them. And further, he notes, persistent exposure to microwave frequencies like those from cell phones can cause mitochondrial dysfunction and nuclear DNA damage from free radicals produced from peroxynitrite. And let's not forget, excessive exposures to cell phones and Wi-Fi networks, even lower in frequency, i.e. longer wavelength than the new 5G technologies, have already been linked to chronic diseases such as cardiac arrhythmias, anxiety, depression, autism, Alzheimer's, and infertility. The new 5G terraphones just crank it up a few notches. Don't be fooled, folks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.